AM 1460, WVOX, and WVIP HD3, New Rochelle.
Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lebensold, your host for the series on the natural world, education, and culture. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, July 29th, 2010, the 39th day of summer. We have lost 2 minutes of daylight since yesterday, 13 minutes since last we met just 1 week ago. The sun rose at 5:48 this morning. It will set at 8:14 this evening. We will have 14 hours and 26 minutes of daylight today. The moon will rise this evening at 9:40. It will set at 9:15 tomorrow morning. We are 3 days past full moon. Next full moon is August 24th. Unfortunately, I misplaced my tide tables. Did I leave them in the booth there? Yeah, you want to run them into me, Jovan, please? Hang on a second. The tides are moving as we speak, and thank you very much. Okay. Next high tide in New Rochelle will be 1:52 this afternoon in Yonkers. There will not be another one. It came up at 12. No, it's coming up at 12:26. Coming up at 12:26. That's the next one. And Haverstraw, 1:36 p.m. and Peekskill, 1:49 p.m. Now, a regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. Marine Lieutenant Colonel Mario D. Carrazzo, age 41, of Springfield, Ohio. He was one of two Marine officers killed in a helicopter crash in Helmand Province, Afghanistan, on July 22nd, which was a week ago today. Along with Lieutenant Colonel Carrazzo was Major James W. Weiss, age 37, of Toms River, New Jersey, both killed in a helicopter crash. Private First Class James L. Okin, age 20, of El Paso, Texas. He was with the Screaming Eagles, 101st Airborne, died in a non-combat related incident. And finally, we get an example of one of these mysterious deaths that are non-combat related. I keep asking what they are. Well, PFC Okin died when he was swept away after a levee broke near his vehicle in Paktika Province, Afghanistan, July 23rd. So that clears up at least a little small corner of the mystery of non-combat related deaths. Navy Petty Officer Second Class Justin McNelly, age 30, of Wheat Ridge, Colorado, one of two sailors reported missing after departing their compound in Kabul, Afghanistan, July 23rd. They left in a vehicle, did not return. McNelly was killed after the two were engaged in a firefight in Logar Province, Afghanistan. The second sailor, Petty Officer Third Class Jared Newlove, remains missing, and the Taliban claim to have captured him. Marine Lance Corporal Frederick E. Vasquez, age 20, of Melrose Park, Illinois. He was with the 2nd Marine Division, killed by improvised explosive device in Helmand Province, Afghanistan, July 24th. Specialist Joseph A. Bauer, age 27, of Cincinnati, Ohio, one of four soldiers killed when insurgents attacked their vehicle with a roadside bomb in Kalat, Afghanistan, July 24th. The other three were Private First Class Andrew L. Hand, age 25, of Enterprise, Alabama, Staff Sergeant Conrad A. Mora, age 24, of San Diego, California, and Sergeant Daniel Lim, age 23, of Cypress, California. Current count of Americans killed in the two wars in the Middle East, 5,589. Coalition deaths, 1,104. So about five times as many, or about five times as many Americans than all other coalition troops put together. The total of Americans and coalition troops is 6,693. These 10 American servicemen were alive on the date of our last broadcast, just last Thursday. Lieutenant Colonel Carrazzo and Major Weiss were killed on that day when their helicopter crashed, perhaps during our program. Please remember that American lives are at risk this very moment. They may be lost at any time If you forget the price of your freedom and lifestyle, you deny the nobility of these warriors who protect those freedoms, which you and I enjoy every day in America. That's right, our right to sit in front of the TV, eat big fat food, hamburgers, sleep in a nice warm bed, have the company of our family and our lovers. Yes, that lifestyle, that's what they protect. Without them, we would be overrun by the masses. Count on it. Each of these deaths is a great loss to their families and to all Americans and all fighters for a better world. May they live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the near future, because there are no more deaths to report. Well, time for the Culture Corner, my reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions, and you have the right to disagree with them, because everyone has the right to be wrong. Actually, today we are just going to tell you about an upcoming program at the Picture House in Pelham. It presents an evening with Susan Sarandon. That's this Sunday, August 1st at 7 p.m. Academy Award-winning actress Susan Sarandon, star of such iconic films as Thelma and Louise and Dead Man Walking, will be here in person in Pelham for a discussion of her career after a 30th anniversary screening of the acclaimed mob drama Atlantic City. A complimentary wine, beer, and cheese reception will precede the film. To purchase tickets and find out more, please visit www.thepicturehouse.org. The Picture House is much more than a movie theater. I will be there 7 o'clock on Sunday to meet with Susan Sarandon. I look forward to that and to see the movie Atlantic City. I don't remember that movie, if I've seen it or not, but certainly it's worthwhile to meet such an accomplished actress. The Picture House is located at 175 Wolf's Lane, just a couple of blocks from the entrance to the Hutch. Hope to see you there. In the studio with me are Mayor Emeritus of Mount Vernon, Ernest Davis, and Joan Austin. They may join in the interview at some point. My first guest is Dan DeVall. Dan was with us earlier this year on February 11th. He resides in San Luis Obispo County in California, where he has established a facility for homeless and sometimes addicted individuals. He has had a long-running feud with the authorities, who have not to date sanctioned his facility and have in fact tried to shut him down. Dan has been arrested and locked up, but released with his inimitable spirit. Is that the right word? I don't think so. Now the authorities are apparently allowing him to bring the facility up to code, but in the meantime, they want to shut him down again, or at least part of him. Let's get to Dan to explain further. Joining us from San Luis Obispo, California, welcome Dan DeVall.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning, Dan. What's the weather like in San Luis Obispo, California?
Oh, it's a little bit foggy, but that'll burn off about 10 o'clock, and we'll have a warm day.
Cool. Here it's overcast and a bit rainy. It rained last night, and I left my car window open. I'm sorry to have to tell you. Look, you have said this. I'm going to quote you or paraphrase you anyway. You have said that as a society, we have an obligation to reach out to the population which you serve. How do you serve them? Does society ignore them or also serve them?
Well, as you know, our government has backed out of the extreme care of mentally ill. We still give medication and stuff like that, but housing is limited, and they tend to release them very soon. They take care of the mentally ill if they commit a crime.
Hold on. Home service just came back.
And if people have money, then they can get mental health just like any other health. But for the most part, a lot of these mentally people wind up on the street. And so that's one of the homeless population that we try to serve. We're also about addiction. We try and help people overcome addiction of drugs and alcohol, particularly if the people are down and out and don't have Social Security or something to keep going. We are very economical.
Okay, and you give them a place to live. You give them food. They do pay a small amount for their meals. How do they pay, by the way? Where do they get their money from?
If they have Social Security or government assistance. That pays part of it. Our fee is $300 a month. And then if they don't, then they work here on the farm for a stipend and their care.
Okay, now we were talking earlier about, I was talking with actually Ernie Davis, who is the former mayor of Mount Vernon, in the studio with me today. And what he says is that we sometimes lose track of what we are trying to do. We're actually trying to help people, and we're not. Hang on a second, I'm distracted.
Sometimes government intercedes, and they are more concerned about the process rather than the end product. So they are good at shutting down, but the whole thing is to help people. And if you start out with that premise, we want to help, you'd probably come up with different solutions rather than shutting down, but to augment what you're trying to do. And actually, when you were talking, I understood that, you know, government has gotten out of some of the business and turned these people into the streets. And so what I see you doing is taking up the slack that government really should have been doing by helping them when government decide that it's too costly for them to take care of them and they turn them in the streets. So if I were the government, I would say, hey, let's help this guy because he's helping society. He's trying to give them meaningful life. But unfortunately, sometimes government sends representatives out and they just look at a book and say, you're not doing this, you're not doing that, we're going to close you down. And they don't care particularly where the individuals will go.
So let me just ask, Dan, what is the status right now? When we spoke on the phone, you suggested that the authorities are trying to they're allowing you to bring the building, the main building, up to code, but they want you to get rid of all of the exterior buildings or the trucks and anything where people are camping out?
Right. We had some sheds that we built that are 10 by 12, and we put two people in those sheds, and they're very safe, but they don't meet code because they don't have a kitchen and a bathroom in each one.
Do they have any plumbing at all?
No.
Okay.
And we have exterior, we have bathrooms, community bathrooms, and we have a community kitchen to feed them.
But why would they need a kitchen in a shed anyway? I can see where they might want you to have a toilet, but why? What do you need a stove for? There must be many, many residences across the country that are within code that don't even allow a hot plate.
No, actually, if you're in a residential zoning, or residential setting, in other words, if you're on a farm or whatever, and you have conventional residential housing, every place you have a residence, you have to have a kitchen and a bathroom in that residence.
Mayor Davis, is that so in
yeah,
every place, or just out in San Luis Obispo, California?
I don't know, California, but it's habitability codes. You know, if you're going to provide shelter, it's going to have the accoutrements of what the code says, and light, air. You got to have doors.
But kitchen? Do you actually need a kitchen?
Well, yeah. It's got to be self-contained.
What if you live in a boarding house with rooms?
Well, no, that comes in a different. It might be in a different zone also. I'm not just familiar with.
That would be multifamily residential.
Right.
And these sheds are obviously not that, right? They're just two-man sheds. Okay, so what is the status now? They want those people who are living in those sheds to leave?
No, they put it to me this time, instead of coming out and kicking the people out and taking a black eye from the public, they told me either you get those people out of those sheds or we're going to put a receiver on your property. And when they place a receiver, I pay $800 an hour to the receiver, for his job, and then I have to pay the tab on anything he, if he hires somebody with a bulldozer to take out those sheds and remove the debris, then I pay it. I don't have anything to say about the decisions. I just pay the bills. When they put a receiver on your property, it's the end.
Obviously, at $800 an hour, not too many, I mean, maybe corporations can afford that for their CEOs, but I don't think anybody else can.
So, but that's jumping to conclusions.
So what's going to happen?
I don't know. I don't have any idea.
Really?
Do you have a lawyer?
Several lawyers. I had a lawyer when I filed this writ of mandate for the way they brought me into this administrative hearing. And then they turned the tables on me by cross-filing, and they filed a demur which says my writ of mandate is bogus, baloney, da-da-da-da-da. And given them that, the demur, they wanted to place a receiver, and the judge turned that request down. But he said, yeah, those people out of there by August 20th, or we're going to come and take further action.
So what are you going to do, Dan?
I don't know.
How long have these people been here? For one thing, I remember this fellow named Jess who came on with us last time. He'd been with you for 7 years.
Right.
So what do you tell these people? I mean, do you just say, okay, out you go, and when we get our building up to code, we'll try to find space for you? What do you say?
Well, I tell these people that if you're in the creek, the park ranger comes through and cuts up your tent and disrupts and this and that and the other, and we've been fighting the county for 9 years trying to give you a better home. And unfortunately, I can't give you the guarantees.
So what is the county doing to give them anything? Is the county doing anything to give them support on any level?
Yeah, the county has said that there's a possibility that if they take further actions, that they're going to give these people $1,500 each and then take that out of my hide.
You don't mean hand them $1,500 cash?
Yes, I do.
Well, but you handle people that have drug and alcohol abuse histories, right?
Right.
What would you do if you were a drug addict and someone handed you $1,500? You'd get high, right?
Just be high for a day.
A day, right. You'd probably just... Mayor Davis, what do you have to say?
I would suggest that this is a public policy issue. You have to get people who believe in your cause, and you have to make the politicians sweat, and you bring the politicians in and organize and get those people registered to vote, the homeless, as much as you can. Because ultimately, it's a political decision. It's a public policy issue that should be shaped. And I would use it as an example of a wrong-headed public policy. You have an excellent opportunity, it seems to me, to make government respond to the needs of people who have been shut out.
And besides getting them to register to vote and kicking up a fuss, what else might he...
Well, that will give him some time. I see people do what they can do. Governments, I've said many times, can never be trusted to do the right thing. They do the right thing under the guise of a force, an opposite and equal force. And the force that you have bodies, you have people, and you have people who represent and should be representing the good of all of the people. And you have to do that, because if you try to fight this, if it becomes just you and the government, you lose. It's got to be the people and the government.
Dan, tell me how many... people you have there currently, and how many you would have to put out if you do what the county says?
Currently, we have about 30 people. The problem is that we have a farmhouse, which is legal. We can put as many people as we can stand in there, or whatever the case might be. And so right now, we have about 17 people in the house. We're going to raise that number up to about 23 people in the house.
And what happens to the other seven?
And then we're going to have to get rid of seven. If we choose to get rid of them.
And what will the county do? Will they take those seven in for the moment until you bring things up to code?
Oh, no. The county is trying to find grant money and whatnot for these. Some of my people, while we're building this larger building, but who knows how it's going to go.
Well, don't they have a program in effect that takes care of people like this if you never existed?
Well, they have a shelter and then they have a day center. But the problem is that there's different rules, and when you take care of the homeless, there's you have to have a lot of different types of programs, and not all shelters take care of. That's why there's a lot of people living on the street. They fall through the cracks.
Also, the shelters are deemed dangerous, and people don't want to go in them because they're not supervised for safety in many cases.
Correct.
They're probably worse than jails, except that you can walk out. But
right.
What good
code?
Is your freedom at that point?
Do the shelters meet code?
Well, it's an interesting thing because a lot of people have... I built a building that I didn't get a permit. They wouldn't give me a permit, so I went and built a large... dormitory building. I called it a barn and just started building without a permit. And boy, they really came down on me for that. But the point is, a lot of people compared the building that I built compared to the shelter as the Taj Mahal. So there's a lot of, just like Mr. Davis said, there's a lot of controversy. And this thing's been going on for 9 years, and if it hadn't been for the media and public support, we never would have made it.
Okay, Dan, thanks very much. We have to take a break. I appreciate very much you staying in touch. Please stay in touch with me and let me know what's going on, and if Becky wants to call anytime, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460, New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Pointe-à-la-Hache, Louisiana, Rome or Athens, Georgia, Rome, New York, Brooklyn, New York, Brookline, Massachusetts, or an inmate at the correctional institution at Brooklyn, Connecticut, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live. The program is Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lovensoul. I'm here with Ernie Davis and Joan Austin, and we will be right back.
Call us crazy.
You're crazy.
But we believe radio should be delivered free of charge.
Are you crazy?
Go ahead. Listen all you want. It's free. WVOX Worldwide and WVIP HD3.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Lori London. Arizona already planning an appeal of yesterday's ruling by a federal judge to block most of the state's new immigration law.
We certainly support Arizona's sovereign right to pass the laws, but it's all for naught if we do not do what the federal government is supposed to be doing, which is securing our border.
Texas Governor Rick Perry standing by his neighbor state, but opponents say the controversial provisions in the law that were blocked would have promoted racial profiling.
Those kinds of intrusions into federal immigration law that raise potentials for intrusions into legal immigrants' everyday business and everyday lives, those are the things the judge said went too far.
Benjamin Johnson with the American Immigration Council. Either way, the issue is far from over, with both sides vowing a fight, and it is a battle that could take it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. This is a Fox News alert.
In the north end of New Rochelle, you'll find an absolutely top-notch printer, one of the very best in the entire county. Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is known for its fine work far beyond the Sound Shore area. In fact, this particular Minuteman Press is easily the class of the fleet when it comes to full-service community printers. Located just off North Avenue in New Rochelle in the narrow Waikagil walkway across the parking lot from the A&P, Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is a terrific resource for individuals and small to medium-sized companies who want something very special when it comes to printing. No matter how big or how small your needs, you get great skill and creativity from Maestro Maselli's master printers, all for very reasonable prices. From business cards to brochures, color copies, high-speed printing, informational booklets, and flyers, it's Minuteman Press down that walkway when you're heading to the A&P, offering quality printing at very good prices. Call Frank Maselli at Minuteman Press of New Rochelle, 914-576-0335. 914-576-0335.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Updated weather forecast for Westchester County and vicinity, calling for some clouds this morning, some showers and thunderstorms are likely, mainly for the morning hours. Into the afternoon, a trend will be towards some clearing, or highs will reach the upper 80s. West winds becoming northwest. The probability of rainfall this morning, about 60%. For tonight, partly cloudy, then clearing overnight, lows mid-60s. Sunny and pleasant on Friday, lower 80s. Clear skies at night, near 60. Saturday, sunshine, lower 80s. Sunday, back to partial sun, chance of a thunderstorm, near 80. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX and WVIP Worldwide.
From the Fox Business Network, the most powerful name in business news. The biggest company of the world makes its biggest profit in nearly 2 years. ExxonMobil comes in with more than $7.5 billion in quarterly earnings. Other companies turning a profit: Goodyear Tire, smartphone maker Motorola, and Dr. Pepper Snapple Group. But earnings were down for the cereal maker Kellogg. 457,000 new unemployment claims were filed last week. It was down a bit from the week before. And if you work for Goldman Sachs, you better watch what you freaking write. Workers being told no profanity in company emails. Not even words with asterisks in place of the letters. And the head of entertainment for ABC, Steve McPherson, was on vacation in Maine when, according to the New York Post, he finds out his bosses at Disney were searching for his replacement. So McPherson decided he'd stay on vacation, and he quit. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Connell McShane.
Ford and Lincoln Mercury Service presents Mike Rowe with some important information about the big tire sale.
Well, that about sums it up, really. It's a tire sale, and it's big.
I'll say, when you buy four Goodyear, Continental, Hankook, Yokohama, or Pirelli tires, you get a $100 cash rebate. $100! You forgot to mention that, Mike.
Well, that's why you're here.
Thank you.
It's the big tire sale at your Ford and Lincoln Mercury dealers.
See participating dealership or visit genuineservice.com for mail-in rebate and details through 83110.
We are back. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle. I am Bob Lovensoul. In the studio with me is Joan Austin. She's been quiet lately so far, and perhaps she'll stay quiet. We don't know. She's just sitting there looking good. And my next guest is Maria Gunno. I hope I have her. I hope I'm pronouncing it correct. She's a resident of West Virginia, a coal miner's daughter. She is an activist on the issue of mountaintop mining, which I believe is also called strip mining. Welcome, Maria Gunno.
Thank you. And it's called mountaintop removal. Call it what it is.
Well,
They're removing the peaks, in some cases, literally ridgelines, in order to get the coal out.
Is it also called strip mining, or is that a different animal?
It's like strip mining on steroids. I've heard Judy Bonds explain it as strip mining on steroids. So, yeah, it's much worse than strip mining. Mountaintop removal has literally removed more than 500 peaks in the Appalachian region.
500 peaks?
Yes.
Just to get it.
And with that, they've destroyed over 2,000 miles of streams. When they blow up these mountains, they have to have something to do with everything other than the coal.
Well, when they blow it up, they use high explosives.
Yes.
Doesn't that get kind of dusty?
It makes it extremely dusty. Actually, the people in the communities here are being exposed to toxic levels of silica dust. Silica dust is, of course, it's glass particles, small glass particles.
Where does it come from?
It comes from the explosions of the rock. When you explode rock, silica dust goes up into the air and falls down on our communities. And we have a lot of sick people in our communities, not only from the blasting, but also from water pollution. The coal companies here are polluting massive amounts of our drinking water, and there's no replacing this or cleaning it up once it's polluted. It's polluted forever.
Okay, now tell me, I've grown to expect from President Obama more environmentally sound, if you will, solutions and procedures. Has this administration been friendly to the cause and confronted industry, the coal mining industry, and made them either clean it up or stop?
Well, the Obama administration has taken steps in the right direction. They're sort of like baby steps, though. I mean, when you've got something as catastrophic as mountaintop removal is, there has to be a ban. You know, it has to be banned. It has to be stopped completely. You cannot regulate it. That's what we're seeing, is the Obama administration seems to think that it can be regulated, that laws can be enforced to make it better, and that's not the case. You cannot regulate blowing up mountains and covering streams, and there's nothing environmentally sound, if you will, about that. And there's it's impacting people so much that it's more of a human rights issue than it is an environmental issue, and it's a huge environmental issue.
Absolutely.
It's impacting our culture so much. The people here depend on these mountains. These mountains throughout time have been like our grocery stores, if you will.
Yeah.
What's happening is the coal companies are coming in and they're just blowing up these beautiful areas that are abundant with food sources and leaving moonscapes. Nothing grows on them. Nothing. I mean, it's a wasteland when they get done with it. And they are shutting the people here out of these mountains. And that's our culture. You know, we gather from these mountains in every season of the year. And to shut mountain people out of the mountains is inhumane.
So you, Maria, let's just get a picture of where you live. You live in West Virginia, in the Appalachians. You were born, in fact, in Hollow?
Absolutely. I was born and raised in a small holler in Bob White, West Virginia.
A small holler?
Yeah. The holler is...
Like Barney Google and Snuffy Smith kind of holler.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a picture of mountains and rural residents. There are some unkind where sometimes people refer to people who live there as backward, but you don't sound very backward to me. You sound very progressive, actually.
I like to say that our people's not really backwards. They just prefer living life at their own pace. And it's sort of a laid-back kind of pace here. We don't like to complicate things. That's one reason we don't like mountaintop removal. It complicates our lives.
Now, you also said that the mountains provide in every season of the year. Do you mean hunting and gathering of wild-growing plants?
Yeah. Growing up, my grandfather was full-blooded Cherokee. So I was taught growing up, to gather from the land. And my grandfather was a coal miner, and my father was a coal miner. And what happened during the rise and fall of the coal industry, our family had to depend on these mountains in order to feed us.
And that's hunting? It
created the coal industry itself. It created a culture of people that's able to survive some pretty bad conditions.
But by living off the land, are we talking about hunting, I presume?
Yes, hunting, gathering.
And this coal policy destroys that.
Absolutely, yeah. And it destroys it forever. And, I mean, these places will never return to what they once were.
Now, you are, as you say, you're a coal miner's daughter and granddaughter. Yes. And yet, according to something I've read here, back in September 2007, 3 years ago, mm-hmm. almost 3 years ago, you had a hearing and you organized media training for 20 local residents. And at the community hall, it was coal miners themselves who showed up and harassed you.
Are
there jobs?
We refer to them as coal miners. They're basically equipment operators.
Okay.
They don't mine coal. They run equipment. In order to mine coal, you have to go into a mine.
I see.
These guys work, they run heavy equipment and move materials.
So this isn't mining at all?
No, it's not mining at all.
So, exactly right. Were those people who interfered with you, mm-hmm. were they locals or were they brought in by the companies and just to do the job and out they go?
There was about 60 people, 60 of those guys showed up at that meeting, and there was about four or five of them that I recognized as being local people. Most of the rest of them are from out of town and out of state.
So it doesn't help you in any way? It doesn't help your region in any way? It doesn't help for jobs,
no.
Taxes, anything like that?
No. It's depopulating our regions. You can't have communities and mountaintop removal.
Well, speak.
There's a small town by the name of Lindy Town, L-I-N-D-Y, at Lindy Town. You can Google it. And Lindy Town is actually, over the past year, has been totally depopulated with the exception of one elderly couple by Massey Energy. They bought up everybody in the community and they're using the homes as trainings for the local fire department. They've literally bought up and destroyed this entire community.
Now, is that where Jimmy Weekly lives?
Blair is where Jimmy Weekly lives.
And he is one of the last, or he is actually the last resident in that whole town, right?
No. Jimmy Weekly is the only resident in Pigeon Roost Holler. He is the only
Pigeon Roost Holler. Wow, what a name.
Yeah.
Pigeon Roost Holler, West Virginia.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful little holler, too, and it's intact. We have very few hollers left here that are natural.
Maria, we're gonna take a little break. Hang on. I'm loving talking to you. You got great charm, and I'm sure that when the bad guys see you coming, they take a deep breath and wonder how they're going to handle it. Just hold on, please. You're listening to AM 1460 WVOX, New Rochelle, New York. If you are listening in Polo, Illinois, Pony Springs, Nevada, Halesow in England, Jacksonville, Illinois, or Florida, Birmingham, England, or Alabama, or in the unincorporated village of Podunk, Massachusetts, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live, and we will be right back.
World and national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lillian Wu. Arizona preparing an appeal of a ruling on its immigration law.
This temporary injunction on key parts of the law could last a while as all these lawsuits seeking to overturn SB 1070 play out in court.
Fox Radio's Jessica Rosenthal in Phoenix, where some in law enforcement say the ruling will not change how they address the crime of illegal immigration. The president standing by his policies.
I wasn't elected just to do what's popular. I was elected to do what was right. That's what you supported me for.
President Obama speaking at the 100th convention of the National Urban League, pushing for his education policy, saying the country's long-term economic success is tied to the success of schools. And Toyota issuing another recall, about 400,000 cars in the U.S., mostly the Avalon model, another 16,000 in Japan for steering problems. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Hey. Do you know who the fastest growing Chevy dealer in Westchester is? It's New Rochelle Chevrolet. Surprised? Don't be. While all the other guys are scrambling to find their way in this challenging economic climate, New Rochelle Chevrolet has carved out a path for doing business the right way. What does the right way mean to you? It means offering you a dedicated sales team, the best prices and service next to none. We call it our good neighbor policy. And there is nothing we won't do for you. And now, New Rochelle Chevy is quickly becoming the go-to dealer for all your truck needs. From crossovers to pickups to dump trucks and specialty bodies, New Rochelle Chevy has it all. And the professionals with the knowledge to make sure you get the right truck for the job. How exciting is that? Real help, real prices, and a real commitment to you. New Rochelle Chevrolet, your good neighbor dealer. 291 Main Street, New Rochelle. Online at newrochellechevrolet.com.
It's time to do it myself. Well, I know a place where the answer's right on the shelf. They got the solution to help me get it done. I
When we need to record a song, we go to the Loft Recording Studios. But when we need some hardware, we go to Cornell's. 310 White Plains Road, Route 22, East Chester, New York. Cornell's!
Family, isn't that what it's all about? Being together, having fun, laughing, enjoying? Where can you go in Westchester with your entire family and encompass all those things? Well, there's one place, and if you haven't already guessed, it's New Rock City in New Rochelle. Everything is made to order for you and your family to enjoy. Whether it's 18 movie theaters or a 17-lane bowling alley, miniature golf, pool and billiards, video arcades, family restaurants, kids' parties to delight all ages, New Rock City has it all for you and yours. Family fun is back in style again, and New Rock City is simply the best thing to happen for families in Westchester County. They've made it their business to make your comfort level exactly that, comfortable by being together and having a fun time. New Rock City, a place you'll want to go back to time and time again, right in the heart of New Rochelle. Just take I-95 to exit 16 or take the Hutchinson River Parkway. New Rock City, where family fun is waiting for you.
WVOX.
We are back. We're speaking with Maria Gunnow of West Virginia. Are you actually in Pigeon Roost Holler yourself, Maria?
I'm not in Pigeon Roost Holler. I'm just on the other side of the ridge.
Hello.
But you're close. We do have a phone call, Maria. Let's take it. Go ahead, Mr. Camp.
Yes, good morning. It is indeed Mr. Camp from Rochelle. Mountaintop Mining. I lived in Europe for many years and Australia. I never heard of mountaintop mining there. The idea that they would despoil large sectors of the environment for corporate profit would be unthinkable in Europe. And they don't do it. They keep it for tourists. They keep it for people who hike on the weekend, as I did. There's always somebody around the mountain areas that like to get away from the city and do some hiking and walking. So the idea that this would be destroyed for short-term corporate profit it would just be unthinkable.
And in fact, we do that here.
So. Obviously, we do plenty of it here, and this is unregulated, especially when Republicans are in office. They're cut loose to do whatever they wish. Of course, the Europeans only use a third of the fossil fuels per capita that we do. They're heavily into wind and solar, public transportation, etc., small vehicles. So they don't need the coal. We are dependent on it, and as we are in oil, and until we start to do something about that, there's going to be this pressure to do more and more. And I just want to say on the cultural part, coming back, that Europeans have been in terms of limited. They know that because of their larger populations that they have a limited land. Reagan said, excuse me, we should not think in terms of limits. We're a strapping adolescent in this country, and we can just keep kind of moving west, and there's always more where that came from.
But now there's not.
Now seeing this is wrong.
Right, okay. Okay, thank you very much for the call, Mr. Cam. Maria, any comments on what our caller said?
I do have a few comments. Something that I think about is the fact that our youth, you know, I've worked in a lot of the schools throughout the United States. I've been on some of the biggest campuses in the United States, Yale, Cornell, Harvard. I mean, I've been to some of the biggest schools in the country. And what I've seen is the leaders, the future leaders of our country, are prepared to transition us away from coal. And excuse my way of putting it, but it's the old fogies that's just not catching up to the modern day. You know, there's people in very high political positions that truly believe that we cannot sustain our energy through wind and solar.
Well, I'm not so sure, Maria, that we can either, much as I wish we could. I'm a tremendous advocate for wind and solar and ocean currents, and wherever there's movement or heat, I believe we should tap all of those. Mm-hmm. But between nuclear and oil and coal, they provide an awful lot. Now, those are non-renewable.
Right. Yeah, I see that as being a part of the problem. But.
Yeah, so what is America's future then? If how do we reconcile this stuff?
Well, we start to begin with. We have to start somewhere. And we don't have a choice. We cannot, I'm going to put it this way, we cannot continue to blow up mountains and to take people's rights and to take people's water, take people's land. We cannot continue to do that.
Well, what
in
do you,
order to supply energy, so what do you, we literally do not have a choice. We have to make this transition.
Well, let me just take a little side trip here. What do you think of the Supreme Court's decision, which allows just those industrialists to finance campaigns as much as they want? This last term, they just said, okay, corporations can now spend as much money as they want to influence the voters. What do you think about that?
I think that is very corrupt, and also it's...
But that's our Supreme Court of the United States. They made that decision. If that's corrupt, what is the future for America? And you say we have no choice. Well, our choice is to leave it the way it is and to see America fail as an experiment and be taken over by...
That's very much the option.
And do you think that's what's...
If we continue going down the path we're going down now, what we're doing is sacrificing our children's future.
And
we really got to give this some thought.
But do you think...
Our children's going to be stuck in a land... that has no energy, no clean water, and no plan for what's going to sustain their lives.
Now, kind of like the rest
really
of them.
We really want to do this to our kids.
Well, I don't. You don't. Mm-hmm. But there are many short-sighted people who don't think that way. They just think in terms of profits.
Exactly.
The Wall Street boys, they think about how much money they can make today and tomorrow. They really don't think about what the effect on the economy or the environment is.
And that's very true. And that's why people like myself, we have our work cut out for us. And it's not something that we can, we can't compromise on this. I mean, because it's literally, my life will not be improved by the work that I do, but my children's will.
But
and each and every one of us have to adopt that same attitude. We can't.
But we won't, Maria.
We have to. We don't have a choice, and I see that as being a big reality check to the United States. Are we willing to choke down the carbon and the nuclear waste off of these power plants? Are we willing to sacrifice our own lives and our children's lives in order to flip on a switch? I think this is important questions that we as a society in the United States need to start asking ourselves.
Absolutely. You do drive a car or a truck?
I do drive a vehicle. Yes, I certainly do.
As do I, and many Americans do.
Absolutely.
So we're using oil. That's one. You know, that's not the coal issue. It's the oil issue, but they're related.
Correct.
And yet, even you, who's an environmentalist, and me, who's an environmentalist, do it.
Absolutely. And we are in the control, if you will, of what corporate America offers us.
Well, you cannot yet, the technology doesn't exist yet, to put either a wind turbine or enough solar panels on the roofs of our cars to gather enough energy to run them.
The technology exists, it's just not being used.
To actually run a car on those?
I'm sorry?
To actually run a vehicle, a car?
Solar power running vehicles, yes. They're doing it in California. I've seen the cars.
Okay. Well, that's a big step that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, there's places on the West Coast that are 100% sustained by wind energy. And they have, you know, the modern technology,
Maria,
that everyone else has.
Maria, we're going to have to leave. We're going to have to cut this short. Unfortunately, there's so much more to talk about. I know that you and your children have been harassed. People have threatened to burn your house. Let me call you up and let's see if we can put you on again, okay?
Sure. That'll work fine.
Thanks so much, Maria. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I would like to thank Dan Duvall and Maria Gunno for joining us and for the work they do. Many needy people fall through the cracks of governmental assistance until people like Dan get involved, and many industries get away with environmental travesties until people like Maria get fed up. Continuous success to you both. Our thought for the week: we are destroying this wondrous ball upon which we live. We are sucking the oil from her bowels, ripping the trees from her skin, draining the fish from her blood, clouding the air she breathes with ash. We are her vermin. We must be stopped. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, the flagship of Whitney Radio. Next up, I haven't seen him yet. Don't know if he's here yet. If he is, Howard Sturman is WVOX's quintessential host. I am Bob Lebensold. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. You are here and it is now. Sorry about that racket you just had to put up with. You should be listening to the strains of Beethoven. Health and happiness to you all.
Fox News Alert, I'm Lori London. The fight is on now that a federal judge has eaten away at the core of Arizona's new immigration law.
We will file an expedited appeal at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Arizona Governor Jan Brewer says if the federal government is in charge of dealing with the immigration problem, then deal with it.
Darn it, do your job.
But Benjamin Johnson with the American Immigration Council says it was a badly written law from the get-go.
Intrusions into federal immigration.